Planet FM is a platform that champions diversity. Not all our programs reflect the views of the station. We encourage you to consider a wide range of information from trusted sources when making decisions about your health.
We need to look up the chain and we need to understand about what are the obligations of government. It's pretty simple. What's under the Act that our government departments are working? What are their obligations under the Act? Because for the public, and I'm talking to young mums with two-year-olds that are at home, search legislation, New Zealand Health Act, Health Act 1956, and then search up the function of the ministry in relation to public health. So what this shows you in Section 3A is, listen to this, without limiting any other enactment or rule of law and without limiting any other function of the ministry. So, of course, by putting that in, they're sort of saying, oh, well, perhaps we need to look at the economics of it, but they're not. So let me continue. Of the ministry or any other personal body, the ministry shall have the function of improving, promoting and protecting public health.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. On the phone from Tauranga, I have Jodie Brunning. And Jodie has been at the forefront of New Zealand, looking at the food additives, the chemicals that people are eating in this country. And she's a National Council member for Soil and Health. She's also a trustee for Physicians and Scientists for Global Responsibility. She's here this morning, and she's going to be able to tell us her background and what she is doing in New Zealand to clean up and clean out the food chain of all the chemicals and additives, etc. So could you please just tell us, as a trustee for Physicians and Scientists for Global Responsibility, is Jodie?
Hello, yes, I'm very grateful to be here today, Tim. Thank you very much. Physicians and Scientists for Global Responsibility have been around for about 20 years, and their work has really focused on genetic engineering and risk and ensuring that New Zealand acts in the public interest and really that our policies ensure that we allow for protection of future generations. I must say, I'm not speaking on behalf of Physicians and Scientists for Global Responsibility here, PSGR. This is, an independent interview, so I don't ever want people to consider that I'm representing their views right now. I need to be quite cautious about that.
Yes, I understand fully. So from your perspective, and a New Zealand perspective, the challenges are?
Well, the challenges are how to promote well-being in the population today and to protect future generations. And at its heart, it's very, very simple, but it appears really complex when you start dealing with each issue separately. So it's a combination of nutrition and toxicity that we're finding in our population today, and the population is sort of replicated across all the illnesses that we're seeing manifested in our population today.
I hear you very clearly. Because everything is sort of going through the roof from the standpoint of the effects of what we're taking into our body. So can you take this further, please, Jodie?
Well, if you look at, well, there's a word I'd like people to understand, and it's the word comorbidity. And comorbidity means that when you become ill, you frequently often don't become ill with just one thing. So you might find you have irritable bowel or a functional disturbance in your intestine, but 60% of people with that sort of problem also have depression. And if you look at obesity, there is a massive overlap between obesity and type 2 diabetes and depressive disorder. So that's an issue. We know antidepressants are up 20% increase in the last 5 years, in the 5 years to 2014. So we've got sort of all these different issues that are affecting the population. And so if you have a bowel that's not working, a digestive system that's not taking in nutrients, and nutrients from food is the most important way we get nutrients, we also have sort of downstream issues, like we have bone density problems, or we have rheumatoid arthritis, or we can't properly concentrate at school. And sometimes in our IQ, our ability to learn and cope and have resilience and all that sort of thing, they're impaired as well. So it feels complex if you just look at obesity and curing obesity, or if you just look at depression and you want to cure depression. But if you start looking at the common factors across this, and the likelihood that you don't just have eczema, or you don't just have Crohn's disease, or you don't just have massive skin problems, anxiety, usually have an overlap. And how does that happen in the first place? What's happening in our population that's meaning this is now sort of common? And it's quite interesting to hear people talk, because we're really good at explaining things and sort of normalising them and saying, oh, well, you know, everyone has this now and it's my genes. And the increase is not directly related to your genes. And you will have some genetic connection, but usually our genes, the environment basically overrides and it stimulates genes. So even if you have a genetic predisposition, if you're able to eat really, really well and avoid the toxicity that is quite startling in our society today, you can not tip into things. And that's why frequently people, earlier generations, didn't have what we've got today, even if we found a genetic disposition towards something.
Yes, that's true. And so with all the data coming through, can you specifically tell the listening audience who's been affected the most and what are the most common, so say, chemicals that are affecting people, and what are some of the these illnesses that people are getting, bearing in mind they're usually entangled with a number of them all, as you just said, coming together in one gigantic soup of complexity?
Well, I guess if you look at what endocrinologists are saying in the world, sort of Dr. Leo Trezan, they're looking at sort of, you know, the plastics in our diet, they're looking at pesticides in our diet, they're looking at our exposure to air pollution and the personal care products, the household products, and it's sort of adding up. And Dr. Leo Trezan considers that problems of endocrine disruption, so hormone damage from the multiplicity of these chemicals, is the second greatest challenge to humanity after climate change. This is a big thing, because it's talk about who is it affecting the most. Well, a baby fetus inside its mother is now exposed to 200, 300 plus chemicals. And then a young child is worryingly more exposed, because you'll find that if you give a toddler a glass of milk and then you give an adult a glass of milk, the toddler will have 3 to 5 times the exposure of the adult, because they consume more per body weight. So when you then do a urine test of a toddler or a blood serum test, because sometimes urine tests show all of the different chemicals, you'll find that the toddler or the young child, sort of the 5-year-old, has a greater exposure rate, that has higher urinary or blood serum concentration. So that means that the child or the toddler is being exposed far more than the adult. And this is really not considered by regulators, because it creates a sort of a whole new cascade of things that you need to consider. And particularly this includes the mixture effect of different toxic chemicals, be they similarly just dietary chemicals, or be they the sunscreen that mums put on thinking that they're protecting their child from cancer, but not being aware that some of the ingredients in sunscreen are toxic as well. So we have a system where there is so much exposure that it's deeply worrying. I can talk to you about the Australian Total Diet Study that's just come out that might be relevant to you.
Yes, I'd like you to be able to talk about this. Can I just throw this in for the New Zealand audience? When Sue Kedgley was a member of the Green Party in New Zealand's Parliament, she was definitely one of our best spokespeople for the challenges coming to us with chemical poisoning of the food chain. And not only that, she was also the chair of the Parliamentary Health Committee. So in that particular position, she was able to oversee all legislation that was passing through Parliament that was to do with health. And so she had a very, very good understanding of the issues. And not only that, she used to go and take mums, or lots of women in particular, through supermarkets. And she would point to all the different veggies and she'd say, well, this has been sprayed 14 times. I think celery was, and now we find out that onions are sprayed about 12 times with chemicals. And she would let every mum know what was really going on with the food that they were taking in. And hence, the move to organics as fast as possible is the imperative, bearing in mind there's still spray drift from conventional farmers blowing in the wind over organic farms. So she was our definite leader in this country when it comes to what's happening. Now, you're in this situation, Jody, where you have taken on the mantle and the chemicals have got even more complex over the last so many years. So I do understand that there is so much on your plate. And I just want to ask quickly, are you getting much support from people in New Zealand to assist you and help you collate all this information?
Well, I guess, Tim, the function of democracy should be to facilitate public health science and public health resources, and that also includes, for me, resourcing in agriculture. And what I understand, I do need to see the reference for it, but I understand that our investment in public health research to understand the environmental origins of disease and, for example, the investment in agriculture to look at soil health and to look at how to maintain soil integrity. So if you look at those two simple areas, the research is 10% of what it used to be under the old DSIR. And under the old DSIR in the 80s, you also had sort of a very strong biology focus. And we don't really have that multidisciplinary focus anymore, which is a very big problem. So this is why you get just about the only people that are jumping up and down, and they've got such a small voice, because even if they get printed in the newspaper once every 2 months, they've still got a very small voice. This is why the epidemiologists in New Zealand are so important. So you've got Grant Schofield, you've got Boyce Swinburne, you've got Alistair Woodward. There are very few areas in New Zealand in public health science where people are looking at this multidisciplinary problem that we have, because, as I said, you know, when you have depression, you can frequently have digestive problems, and all those, you have this comorbidity that is not being looked at from either an economic perspective or a well-being perspective. So we're not paying people to do that. I'm not paid. And this is a terrible, yawning, horrible gap in public welfare and public well-being.
I hear you very clearly. I'm not paid either. It's all a labour of love. That's how it goes. It's the volunteers who are really the change agents here in this whole country, but globally as well, because at a government level, the government has completely dropped the ball. The Green Party have dropped the ball. And so we don't really have a spokesperson whatsoever speaking on behalf of the New Zealand public. And this has to be addressed. And we're having an election next year, and we have to turn this into an election issue, because the health system has been swamped. I spoke with Sue Kedgley about this, and I said, look, there are so many people, due to the choices they've made, taking up hospital beds now through all sorts of sickness, particularly obesity, diabetes and heart problems, and we're going to crash the New Zealand wonderful national health system. And I said, what are we going to do about it, Sue? Does the government know? And she says, oh, yes, the government knows. I says, they do? And I said, well, what about the health department? Do they know all about this? She said, oh, yes, the health department knows about it as well. And I said, well, what are they going to do about it? And she said, they're going to do actually nothing.
So Boyd Swinburne did mention that in the latest wellbeing budget, no one talked about food and diet.
I'm glad he covered that one.
So it's important for the New Zealand public to start, because everyone has their own problem. Sorry, let me revert. Let me go back a little bit. So when you're asked about me being the lone voice, I'm not the lone voice. There are so many people working on nutrition, they're working on helping people to understand the importance of diet, the importance of micronutrients. But the problem is they are not getting traction in government policy.
Yes.
So we need to look up the chain and we need to understand about what are the obligations of government. It's pretty simple. What's under the Act that our government departments are working? What are their obligations under the Act? Because for the public, and I'm talking to young mums with two-year-olds that are at home, search legislation, New Zealand Health Act, Health Act 1956, and then search up the function of the ministry in relation to public health. So what this shows you in Section 3A is, listen to this, without limiting any other enactment or rule of law and without limiting any other function of the ministry. So, of course, by putting that in, they're sort of saying, oh, well, we need to look at the economics of it, but they're not. So let me continue. Of the ministry or any other personal body, the ministry shall have the function of improving, promoting and protecting public health. We do not have adequate education in New Zealand for our children. We do not have home economics or food science that actually looks at nutrition. The food science is angled to food technology.
Yes.
So teenagers are taught to prepare food for the market. Let's produce something that's suitable for the market that can be sold on the market. They're not told that magnesium comes from plant chlorophyll and that 20,000 years ago, when we were just starting to be an agricultural society, we were eating so many dark green leafy plants.
Yes.
It was insane. So the magnesium that we used to eat all the time through the chlorophyll, through the green leafy vegetables, is being utterly denuded in the diet we have today. So if our teenagers were learning about the fact that our body physiology absolutely needs not just the dark green leafy vegetables for magnesium so that our teenagers can sleep at night, but it also needs the bioavailable fiber that their microbiome needs so that the bacteria and the little organisms, it's not just bacteria, it's beneficial fungi and so on. So if we were eating the dark green leafy leaves that this needed, then they might actually sleep better. They might actually have better skin. They might actually be doing better in tests. They might not be so irritable. They might not be so jumping up and down. They might not be so sad.
Yes.
We need to start really carefully looking at what, I can put it two ways. First of all, if you look up the B vitamins, vitamin D, vitamin C, magnesium, and you look up the symptoms of deficiency and look slowly at those symptoms of deficiency, then come from the other. Look at depression and anxiety and look at the somatic symptoms, the physiological body symptoms of depression and anxiety. And if every young mother did that, they started connecting the dots as to where these deficiency symptoms connect in with the symptoms in that we are seeing in mental health that is trashing our youth, trashing our young people. So let's come back to the Health Act 1956 and look at those words, improve, promote and protect public health. Think about antidepressants, anti-anxiety medication. They have their place, but they do not heal.
Yes.
So we have the idea that we need these kids not to tip over. But if I was a responsible government that was looking at improving, promoting and protecting public health, I would be looking at youth access to micronutrients. I would be looking at what the combination, and we haven't got to this yet, of toxicity in our basic diet was doing to young children, because remember we've talked about one glass of milk in a small child is like three times, four times the dose of an adult, what that toxicity is doing. And we would start casting a critical eye over the way regulators assess, approve and select the data, or whether it's in actual practice not selected, it's selected for the regulators by industry. And the most important thing is we would look at the fact that the regulators have to access that data and not have industry supply. That is the most important thing, because right now they're starting to look at the formulation toxicity that's applied on the food. They're starting to look at endocrine disruption, sort of, maybe, but the start studies are selected by industry. So we've got this sort of beautiful combination of, I consider, micronutrient deficiency and toxicity that is really harming our kids and youth, and the health system seems unable to look at it from a it's a complex perspective, but actually it's really simple, because it comes back to what were we doing 100 years ago with our diet that was actually so much better than we are today. And of course, when I say that, I have to immediately say we were in many cases dying young because of infant childbirth, but we did not have the same degree of chronic disease, and we did not have the same degree of years lost due to illness. And if we are sort of an intelligent functioning democracy, there is so much evidence that the processed food in our diet, that the high degree of wheat in our diet, but not just this, it is the chemicals, you know, the
fungicides.
It's a 5 to 7 different chemical formulations that are applied to most arable crops. And once you get 5 to 7 formulations, you have the ingredients in the formulation. So it's not just the active ingredients that's the trouble. So we need to start looking more deeply at chemical toxicity in our youth. So it's chemical toxicity, it's the good bioavailable fibre, and it's nutrient deficiency.
I know. It's a huge challenge ahead of us. And why is it that we aren't getting the professional people combining together? Here you are, physicians and scientists for global responsibility, and yet we should all be responsible, all of us. We have to make sure that what we put into our body is going to be the best that we can source. And people, in many cases, are filling themselves up to fill a hole, to fill this emptiness, or just to gain energy. We need to be far more conscious of our body and what we're putting into it.
Yeah, so as an example of, I can return to sort of a little bit of that later, but to help people understand, so glyphosate Roundup is sprayed on our cereals before harvest, and in that Australian Total Diet study that's come through, and the Australian Total Diet study is actually very important, because particularly in the North Island, our wheat comes from Australia. So we are eating that same food. So when they look at what's sprayed on the bread, you get chlorpyrifos methyl, you get phenytoin, you get glyphosate, you get a product called piperonyl butoxide, and called PBO, it's the wax carcinogen. Now, it's not just glyphosate that's a probable carcinogen. The PBO is seen by an American regulatory agency as a group C carcinogen. So you combine, you've got, you know, 3/8 of, in the Australian total dietary study of the multigrain bread had glyphosate on it. But 7/8 had, of these samples had the PBO, the piperonyl butoxide. And that's an adjuvant. So our New Zealand regulators, not, you know, that's not really considered. Really,
yes. Enough.
And we're not talking about that. And so when you start adding up, look, the sample for white bread, chlorpyrifos methyl, deltamethrin, phenytoin, glyphosate, PBO, and pyrimethos methyl. You look at savoury biscuits. They had chlorpyrifos methyl, cypermethrin, deltamethrin, glyphosate, and PBO. And so you had somewhere between 1/4 or 3/4 of the samples had that stuff on it. So you've got a, you'll be getting the mixture effect of more than, they'll be crossing over, and you've got very small sample sizes, which is very, very imperfect, and that's not helping people either. And in the same total dietary survey, you had, you know, infant cereals didn't seem to have too much pesticide in, but they had arsenic, they had cadmium, they had lead. You know, like, these are our children, you know, and I'm blessed. You know, I can go and buy organic food, and I have no doubt that, say, 3/4 of the population could actually adopt an 80% organic diet. But 1/4 of the population may not at all be able to, and we must protect the most vulnerable. So this is where our regulatory environment is failing. We know that glyphosate, for example, has cadmium in it. We know we have a massive problem with cadmium on our soils because it's in the fertiliser, and each time you put fertiliser on it, you're adding a little bit more cadmium. It just sits there and it increases, which is why it's now in baby food. So, you know, it shouldn't be me that is railing against this. It should be the Ministry of Health.
Correct. This is where we're at the moment. It's a standoff, and because the people, the activists like you and like myself and the few people who really want to draw attention to what we're putting into our body temple has to be of the highest quality. And I know now in Auckland at the moment there are 100 community gardens, of which 75 have started in the last 10 years. And a lot of people, but not enough, we've only got a couple of thousand people involved, are realising that when they put plants and seeds into the garden, they know what they're getting back, because essentially they're all organic gardens and everybody is eating the best of food. Their health is improving all the time. They're working with people, so they're not suffering from any depression or anything. They're happy because they're part of something that's greater, and they're sharing across many different cultures and races different recipes to make sure that that food is really, really tasty as well, which then encourages them to go back to the garden and grow more.
Yeah, that's it. It's getting off processed food and what the French call industrial bread, which is the bread in our supermarkets, is processed food. And so it's recommending, you know, because of the degree of herbicides and fungicides and pesticides on cereals, and that it's culturally a very significant proportion of our diet, you know, a heck of a lot of people are going gluten-free. But I admit that we're not seeing total dietary studies of gluten-free bread. And because they're hard shells, cereals that go into that, I'm concerned that there could be similar sprays. But I honestly have no idea of this, no knowledge. And this is a function, again, of we have too little data. We need so much more data to be able to make really sound decisions. And, you know, so when I talk to you about comorbidity and the fact that you're more likely to have obesity as well as depression and diabetes, we need far more data to help people understand the story of the cascade of illness that comes from a bad diet. So the people that are growing those organic gardens are doing they are doing probably the most important thing that can impact their well-being and health. And for the rest of the population, it is about getting off processed food and shifting as much to whole food. And I submit, you know, like I fried up for breakfast, take 5 minutes, it's fast food, a couple of fried eggs and cabbage and mushrooms, or, you know, some raw beetroot, and you fry it up and it takes, you know, 5 minutes. That is fast food that keeps you full for the whole of the morning. That maybe definitely costs less than a coffee. And Tim, I do submit that if you can't afford to buy an organic cabbage, and in the cities it can be harder to access things like this, I access spray free. Just actually eating, you know, mushroom and cabbage and egg out of the supermarket is actually better than perhaps even having cereal breakfast. So it's starting to move away from the white food. I think that is probably the most important thing people can do.
Well, I maintain it's not hard to grow particularly silver beet or spinach, some lettuce, close to your house. Most people still have a certain amount of space in their backyard. Yes, we're going more into flats and we're getting more into high rises. We have to discipline ourselves to grow this food. And I say to people, I say, look, the story is I want to have the most vital food that I can have. And I'll juice. And often I just went and got some organic carrots. They cost a fortune. But I got some carrots and I've got my own beetroot that I grow, which is organic. And with an apple and a bit of ginger and a bit of garlic, I juice this, and then finally I'll go out to the garden and I'll pick two leaves of silver beet or two leaves of spinach, and I'll put that through the juicer too, because I know that when I pick that juice up, that about 8.5 minutes prior to that, the photons that are in the sun take 8.5 minutes to cross time and space to then get into that, the stoma, the chlorophyll of that silver beet or that spinach. And by my juicing it and then drinking it straight away, I am solarizing my being. I am taking light into my being via chlorophyll. Just this knowing makes me feel empowered that I'm taking in the best food that I can into my being. And we have to realize the connection of light and of what's in the garden, the air, the water, and the minerals that make up the veggies too, and the fruit in this case as well. We've got to make this connection, because otherwise we're going to succumb to industrial farming and factory farming.
So what you're saying there is extremely valid and extremely relevant. But what happens in the mainstream media is that gets fuzzied and it gets moved into a place that's not scientific. So what I believe is quite important is giving people the recognition and the understanding that this is backed by scientific evidence. So you start looking up the scientific journals and you find very clearly that processed food impairs the microbiome. You find very clearly that deficiency in vitamin C and vitamin D impairs the immune system. And when you start understanding that underlying scientific wealth of knowledge that reinforces what you're saying, it helps people have more power at helping when we speak out loud, because we don't want it to be fuzzied and turned into, oh, well, they're just a, you know, bunch of, they're doing alternative food. And what is quite important is to sort of to understand that the science, and the science is as old as humanity, you know. We've always known that an impaired gut meant that we had an impaired greater likelihood for chronic disease, for example. And so what we do know is that people will never, ever heal unless the nutrition is right. So it's, any cell can repair if it's given the proper nutrition. And this is through, you know, the microbiome, through our epigenetic signaling pathway. And so we have this fear of cancer in New Zealand, but it's the environment that is promoting the injury and the inflammation of the cells. And so that environment becomes pro-carcinogenic until we actually give it the right food, give the microbiome the right food, give it the nutrition, take away the toxicity so that the body can regulate the cellular machinery, I guess, because our bodies want to be normal. And right now, if you look at what the Ministry of Health is doing, kind of conversation that talks about healing the body and nutrition is absolutely outside the terms of reference.
Yes. Yeah.
And the if you look at the EPA, you know, epigenetics and formulation toxicity and mixture effects are outside the terms of reference.
Correct.
And if you look at the Freshwater Task Force, that is trying to, there's a bunch of really great scientists in there, industries in there, regional councils are in there. The terms of reference do not include reference of environmental chemicals. So they are producing parameters there that exclude increasing toxicity. So what is the point of developing regulation that in the terms of reference excludes industrial, agrochemical and urban chemical pollution? So it is all about the terms of reference, and the terms of reference can become captured by interests that do not want to have to deal with pollution. So it comes back down to you socialise the costs and, you know, privatise the profits. And if we're not looking at the cost of toxicity to our children, the cost of pollution into our waterways, because we're not looking at chemicals, emerging organic contaminants, the chemicals that are coming through, we cannot possibly abide by, for example, the Health Act or the Resource Management Act. It's beautifully written, but what failing us is not the actual the purposes of the Resource Management Act. It's the way the terms of reference down in the policies are completely usurped to ignore low-level increasing contamination. So, like the function of regional councils is to control discharges. Let's look at the idea that we should be allowing for diffuse emissions of chemical contaminants. Because that's not in the terms of reference right now down in those policies and regulations.
Yes, this is the challenge we've got. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. I'm speaking with Jody Brunning on the poor standards of factory and industrial food throughout New Zealand. Contact and her websites are...
Facebook, I'm Children, Food and Health. I've got a webpage called Children, Food and Health. And then on my website is Right, R-I-T-E, hyphen, demands, D-E-M-A-N-D-S, .org. So rightsdemands.org. So we need to understand that in the 80s, the State Services Commission was emasculated and the public probably needs to really support the work of Peter Hughes. It probably really needs to look at what Simon Upton's doing. Civil society need to understand that there are very few places that can do really powerful work right now. And I think the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment, Simon Upton, is in a very important place for New Zealand, and he's one of the few people that can, for example, not just... He was talking about when we're testing in water to test for the MCI, the macroinvertebrate index, and that's really important. But I would like a message to Simon Upton to go out that once we find out that that is degraded, the MCI index is degraded, then we'll into a suite of testing for emerging organic contaminants, because we're not doing that right now. We've got one trial up in Auckland by Louis Tremblay that's also looking, Dr. Louis Tremblay, sorry, that's looking at EOCs, emerging organic contaminants in Auckland, but also in the Southland. We've got no EOC trials in any of the horticulture or cereal producing regions of New Zealand. So the terms of reference, the national debate is constrained to talking about E. coli and nutrients. And there is no doubt that runoff from cows is a massively challenging issue, but we need to, alongside, be looking at the nitrates, but to looking at the chemical contamination, particularly of sediments, because once you get chemicals locked into sediment that really they stay in the dark and they stay there for a long time, so the metabolites sit there. And that, I believe, the science illustrates that renders that environment sterile and sick. And we're not looking at that. So our beautiful Great Lakes, the degraded Great Lakes, they're not testing, chipping into a suite of testing that looks at forestry emissions, that looks at industry emissions. Because if we did that, we would have to start looking at what the pollution is in our environment. And right now, it's just picking on farmers, and I don't think that is fair at all of farmers, particularly if you look at the way farming has been enabled since, going back to the DSIR, since they took away extension services, they reduced the ability for farmers to know what was the best possible science, particularly when it comes to maintaining soil quality and soil integrity.
Well, you see, once upon a time, the New Zealand government had the Department of Scientific Industrial Research, and it was a good, solid department of scientists with excellent degrees, PhDs, and they looked at everything.
Yeah.
And they were really, really good. But when Rogernomics came through in the 1984, when he infiltrated the Labour Party and sold them the story that we have to sell off all our state-run agencies, we lost a very, very good department that was able to give us a real insight as to what was happening with everything that was happening in New Zealand at a biological or all levels. But they were really, really good, and we've lost that. And now we depend on the corporations for their research, and it's always skewered in their favour.
Well, the public-private partnership sounds really, really good.
Yes.
Only person in the media talking about it, and people we don't have people coming in to debate that paradigm. And so it comes back to, at the start of this interview, I was talking about perhaps we've got 10% of the public, independent public science funded today. And so it makes it really, really, really hard for scientists that simply want to look at, for example, soil biology and how that might benefit farmers, or the microbiome. You know, we've got, you give me the name of endocrinologists working on hormones in the public sector today. Give me the name of toxicologists working outside of the EPA, working in the public health sector to understand the toxicity of our 3 to 5 year olds and how that's impairing their brain function and their body physiology. We simply don't have that. And so the same thing is there for farmers. When they cut the DSIR, the extension services were emasculated. Now, there are areas like, you know, so the Kiwi sector have managed to keep sort of a growers-managed fund, and so they're doing pretty well. And interestingly, the Kiwi fruit sector, if I am not mistaken, are using European Commission pesticide standard, which is the safest pesticide standard in New Zealand.
Yes.
But the rest of the agricultural sectors aren't. And cereals we're importing from Australia is the Australian standard, which is nowhere near the quality of the European standard, which is why so many people say, well, no, so there is a big chance that so many people, when they go to Europe, they say, oh, my tummy, my digestive problems settle down here. And I think it's because the European Commission, the European Food Safety Authority, have better standards than the Australian authorities or the New Zealand authorities do.
That's correct. This is very, very true, because there's a scientist from Waiheke Island, Dr. Mariel Watts, and she's an extremely good scientist. She maintains there's glyphosate in the Waitemata Harbour here in Auckland that has washed down, and this, believe it or not, I think is a lot from domestic users, people on their lawns and all the suburbs allowing this to wash down. But I want to cover this one. It's very important. In 2016, the Greens of the EU, the European Union, decided to test a whole lot of Green MPs within the Union, and they studied about 37 different MPs from, I think, 13 different countries, and every single one had glyphosate that was 3 times above the allowable amount that the EU allowed. Now, if this is the case, if Green Party people have got glyphosate running through their body and it's coming out in urine, and they are supposed to be eating the best of organic food and also drinking, I would say, the best water that they can have, how is it that this glyphosate is in their bodies, and for people who don't eat organics, the body must be swimming in it? So young mothers and everybody has now got a soup of glyphosate running through their body, and like Napa Valley up in California, all the wines now they're finding have got glyphosate in. So it has not been mentioned in the public arena. The Greens don't even talk about it. New Zealand's Green Party, who are supposed to be the party for the environment, have reneged on this, and they've fallen short hugely.
Well, I would say in response to that, first of all, those Green Party people in Europe, if you think about them as adults having these levels of urinary concentration of glyphosate in its metabolites, what are their children having?
Yes.
Now, the second thing, you know, the Greens were really good at supporting Stefan and I when we wrote the paper on glyphosate called Public Health Concern.
When Stefan was there, yes.
Stefan Browning, yeah, and we wrote that, so Public Health Concern, and you can search for it on the internet. But the Greens haven't pursued this, and I'm aware that they're a very small party right now, but as you pointed out, there's really no one there that have food as their passion, dare I say. And, you know, if you don't have someone with that drive, it sort of falls off, you know, because they're busy in select committees, they're busy with dealing with the day-to-day running of government, and so food sort of moves a bit further down, because it's also, you've got to realise that when the Greens bring up glyphosate, they are going to be hammered, and they're also very small in government. So we know that you know, the Green Party's in there with Labor. They need to come out of this coalition and stay as a party. So I find it deeply sad that they're not able to do this, but they've got to balance their risk. And if that risk means that glyphosate's still in our kids' food and it's still down the side of the roads, we've got to think about, well, why is it such a risk that the Greens can't talk about this?
Correct.
Because what we understand is that glyphosate sprayed on our cereal crops, it's mixed with another chemical called metsulfuron methyl and adjuvant organosilicons, and it's sprayed down every roadside in New Zealand. They do not test for glyphosate or metsulfuron methyl or the organosilicon, which is also damaging to bees, in our freshwater, in our lake sediment. I think some of the drinking water suppliers are starting to test for both glyphosate and metsulfuron methyl. Hopefully this year, ESR, the groundwater testing, the monitoring CRI, are testing for glyphosate and, I hope, metsulfuron methyl. And we are yet to see the results of that. But that is our groundwater. I have a feeling that our drinking water suppliers are starting to become a little overwhelmed by environmental chemicals. So we're not talking about organic pathogens such as bacteria, such as E. coli, bacterial sort of toxicity. I'm talking about chemical toxicity. Now, it is very clear and is well known that it's much more difficult to clean chemicals out of drinking water than it is to clean out bacteria. So this is a cost to civil society, or else what it will mean is that our drinking water supplies in the smaller communities will be, especially say if they're near forestry, in forestry areas where there's more drinking water pollution, there's more groundwater pollution, for example, from forestry chemicals. If we're not going to deal with the surrounding water that our drinking water suppliers draw their water from, we're not able to protect our drinking water. Now, you look at the maelstrom that is America. You look at the fact that there's less and less sources of fresh water that is safe to drink in Europe. And then you look at if you do a search for bottled water and contamination and plastics and chemicals, you'll find that everyone's sort of moving to bottled water because they can't trust their local water supplies. That bottled water is frequently contaminated as well. So how can we possibly, this is the crazy thing, we talk about going to Mars, we talk about going to the moon, we talk about all these wonderful, magical things, but we can't even protect a single river.
This is where we're at the moment, Jodie. To mobilise New Zealanders, what do you suggest that we do?
Okay, the most important thing we should do is we should support Simon Chappell and Marima Davidson in the discussions they are having about pulling private funding out of political parties. So we need political parties to be publicly paid in New Zealand. We do not want industry paying political parties, because what this means, and Andrew Little said, oh, there's that culture, that's not our culture in New Zealand. Well, I don't believe 50 years ago our culture was that multinational corporations that have a local company registered in New Zealand could put $100,000 or $200,000 or whatever it is into political funding. So if you'd like to think of it this way. If we do not publicly fund our political parties when they're not in government, so they might not be in government for 3 years or 6 years or whatever it is in between the election cycle, who's paying their wage then?
Yes, I mean, we got asked that question. Now, Andrew Little, is he not the Minister of Justice?
Well, but he said we don't have a culture that would want us to publicly fund political parties, but we urgently need to. We need to look at what Canada's doing, what Europe's doing. Simon Chappell probably has done the most work in New Zealand today. If we did anything, we should be very, for example, if someone was to create a petition, it would be very important that they would work along the lines that he's suggested or that Marama Davidson has suggested. But I don't see why we couldn't have a petition that would be suggesting that we could vote on this at the next election. Why couldn't this be alongside cannabis reform as the most important thing we should do? Because once we, if we look at the capacity for the different areas, big oil, big the plastics industry, the big agrochemical industry, because look at the fact that farmer incomes have reduced, but the agribusiness industry in that are making the money in between the farmer and the consumer, their profits have increased. So we've got to protect our farmers. So how do we reduce the influence of these big industries and protect our farmers, protect our soil and protect our children? And I think the first step to helping democracy is getting industry influence out of our political funding.
I definitely agree with you there. It's imperative for New Zealanders, mums and dads, to talk this over the table at home and at coffee lounges or in cafes. I'm really, really pushing for New Zealanders to make this a discussion in their daily life.
Yep.
And that's where they fail, and we can't have them.
So let's turn back to the Health Act. Let's turn to ideas about how to help with, how to solve cancer. And so it's not just maintaining palliative sickness. We want to heal people from cancer.
Yes, yes.
And we want to prevent them from having cancer. So let's go back to the Health Act and let's look at the obligations of the Ministry of Health to improve, promote and protect public health. And so if we get the pharmaceutical industry, the oil industry, we look at where those funding streams go into government and where those funding streams distort democracy and prevent our political parties from there doing the best for the public interest. And I think, you know, we've got to be really strategic and know that all the people that are suffering from diabetes, their origins of their disease have the same problems as people suffering from depression or suffering from obesity. And not to forget that stress and trauma will always increase and worsen our likelihood of disease, but that food and nourishment and toxicity has a place in as stress and trauma in our body as well. So it feels really complex when you're dealing with each individual illness, but when you start looking at the integrity of the microbiome and comorbidity, that word comorbidity, we've got to know what it means. We need to work out how to protect and improve and promote health.
Excellent. Yes, well, a microbiome is the intestines, the bacteria and the fungi in our intestines. And so it lets people realise that if we have got a healthy gut, there's an excellent chance that we're going to be healthy in our being. Now, this is excellent. Do you have a website that you can direct people to, Jodie, or Facebook?
Yes, on Facebook, I'm Children, Food and Health. I've got a page called Children, Food and Health. And then on my website is Write, R-I-T-E, hyphen, demands, demands.org. So rightsdemands.org. So as I said, I'm not representing PSGR's views, but please look up psgr.org.nz. And I'm also trustee for Soil and Health. So they're doing really important work keeping pesticides out of food and trying to spread that knowledge. And Organic NZ is amazing. The magazine is amazing. So it comes back down to obligations to protect health, the obligations to protect our water, and that all the lower order policies and, you know, processes must comply with the purpose of an act. And right now, this is not happening. So we need to help government. We need to help government fulfil its statutory obligations, and we need a lot more civic education and education in public law to help people help government.
Wow, excellent. Well, look, I want to say thank you very much. Thank you very much, Jody. You have been able to download a lot of information that is extremely important. This every human who eats three times a day needs to take this information into their understanding of our connection with nature. So,
Tim, we are government. We are the government. The government's not over there and we're consumers. Civil society is government. So it's really important to remember that.
It's imperative. They are our elected servants. Jody, thank you very much.
Our pleasure, Tim.
Okay, this was really, really good. Thank you. That was Jody Brunning giving us the information that we really need to bring about the change in health in New Zealand. As a postscript to this excellent appraisal of the sorry state of clean, green New Zealand, and especially our food chain that is now in an abhorrent situation, and that our soil, soil and water has become very sullied, I can assure you, dear listeners, that in all sincerity, that we all have to take action to awaken the unconscious bureaucrats, politicians and policy wonks who hold positions of power to actually realise the enormity of the rapid deterioration of what is happening to the environment and especially the elements that we are made of. It is called being poisoned at one level and deprived on another. The fact that hospital and medical costs are escalating every year in our country and that the data shows that the cause of this flood of increasingly ill children as well as elderly is a direct result of particulates and contamination of the food chain. So why is it that people in power can become so irresponsible whilst commanding such high salaries get away with ignoring this imperative issue? It defies logic. Food quality and health have to become an issue in the next general election, but the Green Party have lobotomised themselves, plus their green credentials, which has been known for quite some time. We as a country have to do better than this. The children of today and tomorrow and future generations are depending on us. Let's get healthy. Healthy beings, healthy life. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send. And remember, even Facebook. To tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it, spread it, radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies, but of 7.7 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Muller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
And Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say, Kia Kaha and Haere Rā.